Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me, and we just did a basketball episode yesterday, so today we're switching back to football. You know, we got a few questions. There's a lot of interest in maybe some of the macro, big picture stuff, breakout players or position group. We're going to work those in. We're going to try to go back to our twice-a-week episodes throughout the month of January. So we'll try to work some of the football ones in, but it's going to be a long off season. It's not like we're going to run out of things to talk. I mean, actually, we're more likely to run out of things to talk about than run out of time. But still, lots of time for some of the less time-sensitive ones. So when there is news, we're going to discuss it. And there's two big elements of news. Steve, you know, you have followed Partridge's career pretty closely. You know, you've written about what an asset he has been on the recruiting trail. We actually haven't talked to you since he left. On the outside, it looks like he wants to be a defensive coordinator. That probably isn't going to happen with Don Brown being the defensive coordinator at Michigan. Even if they did make him a co-DC, it kind of, my hunch, knowing Don Brown and how he operates, is that it would have been, Partridge wouldn't have been as involved in scheming the defense as he will be at Ole Miss. His goals are beyond being a defensive coordinator. I'm sure he wants to be a head coach. I know Jim Harbaugh has mentioned he has what it takes to be a head coach. So I guess your thoughts on his decision to depart. Salary will play a role as well. But your thoughts on his decision to leave and kind of what he did at Michigan. He got a lot of flack early on because he was supposed to be just the Rashawn Gary hire or the Paramus Catholic, you know, get the Jersey pipeline. He proved to be a pretty good on-field coach. I've talked to a couple special teams people who love what he did with the special teams. Safety production, I think, has improved as well. And he was, from the outside, Michigan's best recruiting assistant. So I guess your thoughts on his career, feel like he proved a lot of people wrong, and then his decision to leave for Ole Miss.
Yeah, the proving people wrong part. I mean, yeah, you can look back and laugh at that now. When you look back to the Rashawn and Jabril recruitments and, you know, how that's the belief as to why he was maybe hired, which honestly at the time, I don't know, maybe that was Michigan's thought, is maybe part of the thought anyway, you know, because he did start out as basically like a recruiting director of recruiting coordinator type deal. He's tangible proof that recruiting can make you quickly climb up the ladder in the college football ranks. And that's it. You're seeing guys now get head coaching major head coaching jobs, in my opinion, driven not solely, but highly off of how they recruit. Chris Doble is a perfect example at Oregon of a guy that recruiting, his ability to recruit elite talent, I think is what has gotten him to where he's at right now more than anything. Not taking away anything as his actual coaching ability, but it's what got his foot in the door to allow people to evaluate him as a coach, was his ability to recruit and make people take notice. I kind of see Partridge in a similar light in that regard. He basically walked in the door and knew exactly how to recruit high school students to come play at Michigan. Great connecting with kids, the families, kind of a no BS style, a well-earned promotion. I think the fascinating thing just from his standpoint is going from working for Lane or from Jim Harbaugh to working for Lane Kiffin is going to be a very interesting shift, but he's a people person. You know, that the only people that recruit well, you have to be a people person. I assume he'll adapt. And this is his real big, this is his big opportunity on the big stage, you know? And I think I posted this, I think Sam posted something similar, because it would not surprise me down the road if Partridge made his way back to Ann Arbor, depending on how this stint with Ole Miss goes. People got to remember, this is the third straight offseason that he's been heavily pursued by other programs. He turned down Bama. He turned down Maryland when Durkin got hired as the head coach there. You know, and that was out of, there's a mutual respect and loyalty for Harbaugh in that regard for Harbaugh being really the first guy, the guy that gave him his real shot. I mean, you know, it's Harbaugh kind of is the one who got the ball rolling on this. You know, not saying it, another program couldn't have hired him at some point and he wouldn't be where he is now, but, you know, Harbaugh really took a pretty sizable shot on him at the time, just because at the time he was a high school coach who, like I said, most people believed was, you know, a pipeline to, yeah, Gary and then maybe some other guys. But no, turned into their pound for pound best recruiter, which is why it is of the utmost importance that Michigan hires a recruiting somebody who can recruit to replace him. You have to.
Yeah.
It cannot be somebody who does not have any recruiting acumen. It would be heavily damaging to their recruiting efforts. Because they're, you know, Partridge, again, one of the best recruiters in the country, but you can find other recruiters. You can find guys that can recruit well. That just, that has to be the aim with this safeties coach hire. It has to be. If they do not, if they go, you know, we've, and by the way, we do have a 2 months for one promo right now. Sam's been killing it covering the coaching search. One thing, when you see NFL names involved, to me it's risky, particularly if they have not had much or any experience in the college game.
Right.
Now you could hire a guy from the pros who comes in and recruits his butt off, but from Michigan's side of things, so far, anybody they've brought back from the NFL to Michigan has not been an effective recruiter. When you look at
Brian Smith,
Greg Jackson, Pep Hamilton, Tim Drevno. I mean, I'll at least give, you know, I know Drevno is kind of the easy, like the guy that everyone likes to give a hard time, but I at least give him the, he did put effort in the recruiting trail. His effectiveness was inconsistent, I guess, but he at least did the
Zordich
grinding.
Worked. Sorry, just trying to run through the names.
Zordich, even Zordich still is not their most aggressive recruiter, I guess. He's definitely won them some solid races. He's not their most aggressive recruiter. You know, not every single one of your assistants is going to be like an uber recruiter, but you have to have enough of them. And to lose a guy like Partridge, that to me, it has to be the primary aim of the hire. I'm sorry, but they can, you know, not again. And that the guy's obviously still got to be a coach. You know, you can't just bring in some guy who's good with people and expect him to coach safeties. But I think it has to be priority number one, because we, you know, see more and more that to recruiting, the better you recruit, the better hand you give yourself, the better chance you have of winning the games that you want to win. So to lose your top recruiter and to potentially replace them with somebody who either has no recruiting experience or, again, I think a lot of times these guys that come from the NFL, they're not even invested in, like, there's no personal investment in trying to recruit super hard, you know. And I don't want to pick on the former guys, but guys like Brian Smith and Greg Jackson, we never heard their names on the recruiting trail. And if they go that route again, you know, I just don't think it's a good move. You know, that they have to replace Partridge on the recruiting trail in some capacity. And they have other staff members who are recruiting fine. Sharon Moore actually finished, or right now is ranked, I think, 13th in the country for the cycle, which is great. He's really, really their next rising star from a recruiting standpoint, because he's a guy that we've already seen it with Daxton Hill, Darian Green-Warren. When your tight ends coach is winning a recruiting battle for a safety out of Oklahoma and a cornerback out of California, that's usually a good indicator that the guy's a good recruiter. So he's going to, you know, might be sort of that lead guy for them, like what they did with Partridge, where they'll throw him in on a race that's neither his area or his position, just because he's a really good recruiter. Jay Harbaugh, underrated as a recruiter, always underrated kind of across the board, but that's a whole different topic. Ed Warner, I think, has really been a very pleasant surprise. I think we talked about that before as well, a pleasant surprise recruiting when he came over from, I don't know where he came from. Did he come from Ohio State or Minnesota?
He was at Minnesota for a year.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Recruiting was kind of the knock on him, but he's been really good. I mean, he's had Michigan in a lot of races every year on offensive line. So
his evaluations are good too. Yep, I mean, you agree. Know, yeah. Yeah.
Jeff Percy, another example. Ryan Hayes. I mean, our guys at 24/7 came around on Hayes and Mayfield after Michigan had already gotten them and made them top 100 type guys. And Mayfield looks like a future star as quickly as next year. And Hayes might be their starting left tackle. That was really the first class where Warner did his evals, and they only took two tackles that year, and both look like home runs. You know, or like Mayfield definitely does, and Hayes, well, he was the top offensive lineman in the first game of the season. I mean, they obviously have some tools there. So, yeah, I mean, biggest thing with replacing Partridge, though, it has to be recruiting-based hire. And if it's not, then... Yeah, I don't know. It would not be optimal, in my opinion. It's just the only way to put it. More and more evident all the time that recruiting... Well, again, I go back to Oregon. Look at what Oregon is doing right now, winning the Pac-12, because they're winning the recruiting battles. And they've gone and they've raided California and, you know, taken some guys that would normally sign with USC and UCLA, and they're really, obviously, right now, look like the prime program in the Pac-12 again.
Right. No, absolutely. I completely agree. This has to be a recruiting hire. I cannot understand why they're going after, you know, and we're not going to give away Sam's list because it's really great little thing it's a great big thing for our subscribers to have, and so we're gonna keep that for them. But quite a few NFL names. I was very surprised, and I have the same experience with, I mean, not just even recruiting. These guys are often looking for their next NFL job. They're looking for this to kind of leverage into. I think Michigan would be best served hiring somebody who wants to be a college defensive coordinator and a college head coach down the road. And that's exactly what Partridge was. I don't think you could actually hire Partridge anymore, or a version of Chris Partridge anymore, because of the new NCAA rules. I think you'd have to give up recruiting that high school for 2 years or something. There's a couple weird rules now, which are probably net positives, but still. So that's maybe not the route you go. But yeah, someone in the college ranks, I mean, there are other safety coaches or defensive back coaches who are doing a lot of impressive things in the Big Ten and in the entire country. Steve, can you help me, though? Can you help me understand why Devin Bush was not the first name they called? I just cannot figure it out. And maybe this is, I'm not quite as in touch with everything, but we saw him coaching drills down at the Citrus Bowl. The players are really responding to him. He has a lot of energy. He was great at explaining things, I felt like. Like, even I was understanding the technical changes he was trying to make. Him and Partridge had a really good rapport bouncing off each other. When we watched, Bush was actually leading the drills. And this is someone who, I mean, recruiting is a lot more than your name. And I think every coach who has had a name has learned that. But he was a first-round draft pick, national champion in college, won a Super Bowl, and then actually did put together a nice pool of talent, winning a state championship as a high school coach. He's been at Michigan 3 or 4 years. I feel like the transition would be almost seamless. Is there anything I'm missing here as to why he... I mean, I there's probably a couple other names that I saw that it's like, okay, you'd probably take him because he's done this for a few years. He's been an assistant coach in college. He actually has done it himself. But after those names, why is Devin Bush not the next name? Like, what is Michigan looking for that I'm missing, or what does Bush not have that I didn't know about? Do you have any idea?
I don't. I should know at some point what the deal is there. It does not look like he'll be the guy, and I'm barring a change from what I know. I will be very interested to hear the explanation, because I agree, and I have zero doubt. I think I said this after Partridge left, that Bush would kill it as a recruiter for Michigan. Geez, not even just off his own name. I mean, his son is becoming an NFL star, you know,
right?
And that carries some cachet, you know. I mean, that's already put them in a couple races in Florida for a couple of pretty good linebackers out of Florida, you know, this next cycle, not 2020, but, you know, so No, I don't have a good answer there, at least as of now. I suspect I'll probably get some kind of idea here in the near future. Well, obviously it'll go on the site, but yeah, I mean he's kind of what you're think what I'm thinking of though when I talk about it needs to be a recruiting based hire. You know, a guy that I don't think would jet immediately. He's already been in Ann Arbor for a while. He's comfortable there, and he's not been a college assistant, so I would be surprised if it was a would be the type of deal where, you know, he would leave after 1 year. That's the other thing too, real quick. They got to get somebody who will commit to more than 1 year. I mean, it's getting a little, you know, there's no the continuity on the staff is, I think, something that's there needs to be maybe a little bit more emphasis on. You know, and as far as, you know, we see what's happening with Campanile, who may leave after 1 year. You know, it's very hard to build some recruiting momentum when your best recruiters are. Now, again, I'm saying this Partridge was there for a while, right? But I do think I just more staff continuity, and I don't think there's like you can't point a finger at anybody for that as far as that goes. You know, because the thing with I think this is where being Harbaugh, it can be a little bit difficult. Is he's had such an extensive tree of coaches who have gone on to do great things that I think a lot of guys may see coaching under him as a that next step, sort of like what you're talking about with an NFL type guy, whether it's a current assistant or a quality control or whoever, to come back into college ranks, coach under a guy like Harbaugh for 1 year, and then oh. He coached under Harbaugh for a year. Like, this guy's got some good experience, and you can bump him back up, you know. So I think that's something else you kind of want to try to nail down. You know, I mean, granted, not every situation I think is like an Al Washington where that kind of made a lot of sense because he's from Columbus and Ohio State was offering him a lot more money. Like, that's just in Michigan was never going to match that amount of money. Like, that's understandable or a little more understandable, but.
But like McElwain was never, and I don't think that was the worst hire, but he was
No,
never going to be here more than a year.
exactly. And yeah, not, no, he did a fine job when he was here, but it's not about a guy coming in for 1 year and doing a really good job. You know, it should be about getting guys that want to be at Michigan for, again, no, you're not committing your entire career to be there, but just some extended stays. You know, and I don't want to compare it to Clemson because Clemson is the outlier, and I know a lot of programs have a ton of turnover on their staff every year, but you know, Clemson, they've had the same staff for like 5 years or something. It's like this like huge event when their offensive coordinator is leaving. Like they can't believe that this guy's leaving, even though he's been there for like 7 years. Well, no, you know what I mean? Or Venables, it's like people can't. It's just amazing.
They just lost a guy who had been, I think he was their co-OC. He'd been their co-OC for like 12 years
Yeah,
for
it's
all of
just
Dabo's tenure.
impressive. You know, and I'm not saying that Michigan needs to replicate that, but yeah, I guess I'm speaking more to this individual hire. Get somebody who you know can be there for a few years. Like, or that you know, that you're not, you know, hope or a guy who's not going to come in with the fear of that he's going to like jump ship after a year. I think you want to try to get somebody who'll be there for a few years, much like Partridge was, actually. So now, clear as day to me, I've said it at the beginning, I just right when this happened, it has to be a recruiting hire. And not just because Partridge was such a great recruiter. That's part of it, but it's also just you have to fill this spot with a guy who can recruit. And the same goes if Campanile was to leave as well. So
Well, you know, I've put in my speech for Devin Bush. Feel like it makes you know, is it making too much sense? And so Michigan's looking elsewhere. I don't know, but
I don't know if that'd be the case. I don't think that'd be the case.
I mean, he hasn't been a position coach in college, so that is relevant. He hasn't necessarily done the whole deal, but I feel like he's worked pretty closely with Partridge for a few years, and so if it's not
Right.
Michigan, I imagine someone else will hire him.
The
Anyway,
thing,
we
real quick, one
Oh,
quick
go
thing
ahead.
though. I was just gonna say, there's one thing, you know, the hiring of assistant coaches is one thing I don't think you can give Harbaugh crap for. By and large, he's made really, really good hires when he's had to make hires. Just like I said, I think this needs to be recruiting. I know that kind of repeated what I just said, but if it if he hires somebody from or somebody who doesn't have any recruiting experience, you can bet your bottom dollar that the guy will be a really good coach of the players. I just think that the increased emphasis on recruiting, that they have to go that route. Even if the guy is a good X's and O's type coach for safeties or defensive backs, I just think this needs to be primarily recruiting. So I'm done.
Speaking of recruiting, we can switch to the other main topic that we're going to discuss. And we got a question related to it. So we did address, we'll see if we have some time for a couple lightning round questions at the end too. But Steve, I'll let you introduce this because I only read the snippets and then I kind of took it in a different direction on the radio show. But Steve Wiltfong dropped some notes kind of comparing Michigan to Ohio State and I believe Penn State on the recruiting trail and what they're doing. Go ahead and for the listeners who didn't see all this, go ahead and let us know what was said and kind of what the uproar is.
I mean, the gist of it was that Penn State, Ohio State kind of outwork Michigan on the recruiting trail and are maybe more of the cutting edge recruiting wise. I mean,
so Steve, what does cutting edge mean?
Well, that's right. I don't know. I think what he was trying to say, and it's like he had to come back on because of course people don't want you to be a homer, but then when you say something critical, you're being, you know, you're a jerk and you suck. So he had to come back on and kind of re-explain that, you know, his thing wasn't that Michigan is like recruiting poorly or recruiting badly. It was more of, you know, there are a few things maybe they could do to take that next step recruiting wise or to maybe recruit at a level a little bit more effectively. And a lot of what he said, I kind of agree with. There were a few things, you know, it's like, I don't see like using Penn State as a benchmark was odd to me because Michigan has literally out recruited Penn State for four of Harbaugh's five full cycles. I don't care about 2015.
Okay.
He got there. I mean, he had a month to fill that class. He came in January. Signing day was like 3 weeks later. I'm not going to say that.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree with you. I didn't realize it was four out of five. Yeah, that you're right. There's no reason to act like Penn State's running laps here.
Right. And he's 3-2 against Penn State. You know, it's not as if Penn State out here has Michigan's number or anything like that. Now, you know, like I said, I agree with some of it. And that's a big part why I said that this next hire, these hires, depending on what Campanile does, need to be recruiting oriented, because I think 1-11, I can see where, you know, maybe those staffs, again, I don't know how many assistants they have, 11, 10?
10 assistants, yep.
Yeah, 1-10, that maybe top to bottom, there's a little more push. But you know, so he wrote after the Theo Johnson recruitment, Penn State, like it's also just a difference in approach, is that Penn State is uber aggressive on the recruiting trail, very aggressive, where like Theo Johnson was going to commit to Penn State earlier in the process and he decided to back off, and the next day there were articles of Penn State tight end Pat Freiermuth talking to Penn State media, explaining why a prospective tight end recruit should commit to Penn State.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Michigan's not going to do something like that. It was orchestrated. You could tell the way it all happened.
I get that kind of looks tacky. Is there a reason Michigan couldn't do something maybe
I just
more
don't think it's,
veiled?
It's not their style. I mean, I think they just recruit the player and the family more directly. Penn State, I think, from everything I've always been told and know, they're a little more panicky. And if, you know, anybody from Penn State out there is listening, I don't really care, like, what you think, because I don't really think that Penn State recruits very effectively. That's not my point. It's not really a criticism. It's just a difference in philosophy. you know, and that Michigan's is a little more, and I think this is where fans can get frustrated, is it's a little more, like I said last week, they cast like a wide net with these verbal offers, right? Michigan always throws a lot of verbal offers out there. But when it comes down to it, there's a much smaller concentration of guys that they actually recruit. But then they're also, they don't take this uber aggressive look with a lot of guys, which is why, you know, like the Under Armour had the Future 50, the 2021s. You know, you don't hear a lot of kids say, well, Michigan's recruiting me harder than anybody is right now. You know, when you'll see a lot of the same schools mentioned in those types of deals where it's like, you know, yeah, Penn State, I hear from Penn State all the time. Penn State's recruiting the heck out of me right now and all that kind of stuff. So my thought is they try to kind of tailor it to the family and the unit as a whole and not so much just pestering the kid all the time with recruiting. You know, and again, it's, I think some instances it works, some instances it doesn't. Just like, well, like keep using Penn State as an example, but where that being uber aggressive, I think can sometimes work and sometimes it doesn't. You know, it's like Michigan has beaten Penn State for plenty of recruits, just like Penn State has beaten Michigan for plenty of recruits. Like they've tangled quite a bit. And I think I'd say it's relatively even. I don't think either of those programs, same with Michigan, Notre Dame, you know, is the other program. I think I'd actually argue Notre Dame probably has gotten the best of Michigan until last cycle, gotten the best of Michigan quite a bit more. But, you know, I just, as far as the criticism with their approach, I think the one thing that I really disagree with is, you know, we don't know really what cutting edge means necessarily, because Michigan, I strongly believe, does some of the most thorough and widespread evaluations of any program in the country. That's how you get guys like Hassan Haskins and Ronnie Bell. You know, guys that really think about what they've gotten from those two just this year alone and the minimal amount of effort they had to put in to actually recruit them against other programs. That's a massive win for them to do that. You know, and so I think their eval system and the way they do their evaluations and the thorough nature of them is one of the best in the country. Where I took a little umbrage was, you know, when Michigan has tried to think outside of the box, you know, all of a sudden here comes the NCAA. We talk about the satellite camps, which were a great idea. I understand that the NCAA can't have like officers police every single one of those so that they, you know, the impermissible contact, all that kind of stuff. I get that. But at the same time, you know, it's like schools break contact rules all the time. And it's just a fact. And these satellite camps really were not just beneficial to Michigan. I mean, because there would be 15 schools at these. That was the other thing. Michigan opened their doors for these camps to all schools. It wasn't like they were, you know, shut. I mean, even when they were in Baltimore, I think Maryland was there. You know what I mean? Like Ohio State came to some of these satellite camps that Michigan held. I mean, it's just, it was open to anybody. It's not as if it was a closed type deal. And here comes the NCAA to kind of shut it down. Or the other one, too, I kind of think of was the coaching clinics, which I thought was a genius idea. Where you have John Harbaugh, you got, I don't remember who else was at there was the first one that had like, what, four or five NFL head coaches, bunch of college head coaches. And then Michigan had, I think, 10 high school coaches from some big time programs come and speak as well. That's like innovative thinking and thinking outside of the box. Because you get coaches from those types of high school programs coming up, that builds so much goodwill, you know, for Michigan with those types of programs and those, then effectively those kids. But then here comes the NCAA and they kind of shut it down. You know, now it's not, I don't know if they even do a coaching clinic anymore, if they've had one or not. You know, so as I was not in agreement of the idea that Michigan hasn't done things or attempted to do things that are a little bit that are more innovative, you know, because even the signing of the stars I thought was really cool. I kind of wish Michigan would have kept doing that. I always thought that was a really neat event that was focused around the kids and kind of acclimated them to the fan base too, which I thought was one of the better or like cool impacts of that is like, you know, now you know, I don't know, like a my uncle or somebody who's like a Michigan fan but isn't like diehard would know who Giles Jackson was before game one last year because they saw him on Signing of the Stars and learned about him and stuff. Like that stuff was like, I thought that was like really neat stuff, but you know, all that stuff's been cut out. Now the Signing of the Stars I know is Michigan's call, but you know, you get where I'm getting at though, is like Michigan has tried to do a lot of things to kind of change the game recruiting wise, but they've sort of, in my opinion, been thwarted, you know, by the NCAA and you know, so I don't know. There are things they could do better. I think one of the things that Steve did say real quick was that Michigan has maybe taken some chances, not chances, but taken some low hanging fruit as far as maybe taking some guys that they shouldn't have taken because it was right there for them for the taking. I think you could look at the 17 class, which at this point is really looking like a disaster of a class. I mean, there's just almost no other way to put it. And we were talking a lot about the defensive line, but really it's across the board now. When you consider all the transfers, the attrition, you know, that class is decimated. And like two of its three best players are two of the three lowest ranked players in the class, if I remember right. You know, I agree. I think, but I also think that Michigan is kind of, that's changed. I wouldn't look at the last couple classes and agree with that assessment now, but I think if early on in Harbaugh's tenure, I think they would take three or four guys in each class that maybe, if I was being honest, I would have said, you know, maybe we go for a different guy or maybe look elsewhere. This doesn't seem like a Michigan caliber prospect. So, you know, they have hindered themselves in certain instances. I think, again, though, I think they've cut that down in the last couple cycles, especially. I think 19 and 20, both like very good. And even 18, which like I tweeted last week, I think we're going to end up looking back someday that 18, the class that everybody wanted to crap on, is going to be better than 17, which yeah. I think was the fifth ranked class in the country that cycle. So that's, again, I think Michigan's eval situation has improved, and that's 18 is going to be proof of that. But I don't know, kind of a little bit long-winded, but yeah, I had some thoughts on that. It was kind of didn't bug me because, like I said, Steve knows what the hell he's talking about. He always does. Steve's more in tune to the college recruiting world than maybe anybody, literally anybody in the country. And B, you know, like I said, I agreed with a lot of what he said, but I had a couple little bit of disagreements of things that, I don't know, maybe if somebody who doesn't cover the team day in and day out wouldn't have thought of or would have remembered, you know, going back to the satellite camps, that type of stuff. So that's the kind of stuff about recruiting I like to talk about.
Yeah, I think the one thing, and in fairness, I haven't looked at everything Steve said, but I know at one point it was, I mean, you mentioned Penn State. They've out-recruited Penn State 4 out of the 5 years. I also don't know that it's fair to compare to Ohio State. I don't know that that's fair to Michigan because, you know, we had a caller call and say Michigan needs more top 100 recruits, and I was like, I'm sure they do. But at the same time, they're not going to get them because I think they pointed out that Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Oklahoma, and Ohio State combined to have like 60 or something of the top 100 recruits. And I was like, well, why on earth would anyone not from the state of Michigan that didn't grow up a Michigan fan commit to Michigan over those six schools? I can't think of a reason why. They're producing more in the past, you know, in their lifetime. Because remember, these are 16, 17-year-olds. Those schools have contended for more titles. They have sent more players to the NFL. They have been better. They have developed better in terms of who's making the money in the pros, which is what every person who straps on pads dreams of someday. And they have been better programs. I mean, they're averaging more wins. Those six programs are averaging more wins over the last 5 years than Michigan has gotten in its best year. So, you know, I know that's not necessarily, that's kind of the downer way to look at it. I'm sure our listeners don't love that. But at the same time, Ohio State, and there was like one thing that I remember we ended up discussing is Ohio State has their recruiting department do a lot more of the evaluation, and then they send the names for these position coaches to call. That's a nice luxury for the Buckeyes to do, that they can kind of pick and choose and make their board without necessarily having to go and do the legwork as assistant coaches themselves. So Michigan, look, we've discussed they're probably not passing Ohio State until either Ohio State falls off or Michigan gets very fortunate with a quarterback, you know, a Joe Burrow type, a Deshaun Watson type, someone who pushes Michigan over the edge. Or Ohio State has to fall off, kind of like what Florida State did with Clemson. And so until that happens, they're not going to out-recruit Ohio State. So what they have to do is they have to out everything else Ohio State. They have to out-scout. They have to out-evaluate. They have to out-develop. And I actually do agree with you. I mean, I think wide receiver is the perfect example. Donovan Peoples-Jones, elite talent. Ronnie Bell didn't have a Division I football offer. Well, by the end of the season, one of them had passed the other one. And it was clear Ronnie Bell was a receiver that was doing things better than all the four-star receivers in the world were doing. And so, yeah, you have to evaluate and you have to develop if you're Michigan. You're still going to win. You're still going to be in some recruiting battles, of course. It's not like they can't recruit a single top 200, top 250 recruit to save their life. They have a bunch. But in terms of, I don't know, saying, well, Ohio State does this. Anything Ohio State's doing recruiting right now, Michigan probably would fall flat on their face if they tried to do. I mean, the way Ohio State recruits nationally, the way they've kind of mined Texas, the way they've really taken over Florida a little bit too. I mean, these are things that winning national titles and winning, what, 8 Big Ten titles now in the last 12 years, something absurd, maybe it's the last 15 years. When you do that, you have a little bit more of a prestige, more of a brand. Right now, Michigan, with the recruits, has a brand. They're probably around top 10 to 12 is what they are. And so where are their recruiting classes? Generally the top 10 to 12. So I think, I don't know, I didn't, that was one thing that Steve said, which again, I'm not, he knows infinite, I mean, he could forget more than I would ever know about the recruiting of the upper Midwest. But I would say to fans who are asking us questions, word out there is that Ohio State's doing this better than Michigan. I mean, have you seen the games lately? Have you seen the national rankings lately? Ohio State has more top five finishes in the last 18 years than Michigan has had in the last 70. So it's just
mindset. That's
right. Mindset, right?
Well, no, it's like the people that say Michigan doesn't have the right mindset or they don't care as much about the game as Ohio State does would be the ones that if like Michigan in like the middle of April posted like a hype video where they're like punching a Buckeye like dummy or something, they're tackling a Buckeye
dummy.
Yeah,
do more, say less, right?
Yeah, it would be like, who cares until you beat Ohio State? You know, it's like, that's the mindset. That's just so, it's just beyond stupid, you know? So did they have the right mindset in 16, you know, and in 17, were they an average quarterback probably would have won them that game? You know, did they have the right mindset then? It's just like, that stuff's so stupid, you know? Whatever. We're not going back down that same road again. We've talked about Ohio State enough.
Right.
But strictly from a recruiting standpoint, though, yeah, like you said, you're not, yeah, it is not going to be, you're not going to catch them from a rankings and ratings standpoint right now. You're not going to catch them without something changing, whether that is on their end or on Michigan's end. So, you know, that no amount of innovation or effort can replace what I told you before the show is that basically Ohio State has their recruiting success right now was a seed planted 20 years ago when Jim Tressel came in and completely took over the Big Ten.
Well, and they had a generationally great, maybe the second best coach in the last 40 years, Urban Meyer, come in and take it nationally. And he deserves a lot of credit for that. That's where this factory came from. Because even under Jim Tressel, they were good every year, but they were kind of closer to Harbaugh good every year. You know, they were not necessarily I mean, they won the national title in 2002. They played for one in 2007. I get that they would occasionally be in that group, but I mean, there were a few 10-3 type of seasons, and so yeah, I mean, it's been something that's been building for 18 years, and I think the fact is, historically, I mean, you know, the one Michigan coach who has a statue was 10-9-1 against Ohio State. So I get where Michigan fans want to compare Michigan to Ohio State, but right now they're in completely different places. And so Michigan has to recruit what's going to work for them. They can't, you know, it serves them no good to recruit a top 100 recruit that whose head isn't in it, who's going to transfer if he isn't starting by sophomore year, or who, if one 3-star guy passes him on the depth chart, he bolts. They need to recruit players that are going to work for them, that fit what they want in a player, both physically and mentally, and that they think they can turn into something. Because, you know, Kalik Hudson's the perfect example. He's a 3-star. A lot of schools wanted him, but he wasn't necessarily, I mean, he was only a 3-star recruit. But Michigan knew exactly what they wanted to do with him. And I think he ended up with over, what, 240 tackles, which is rare to do in today's college football. You know, Devin Bush, Mo Hurst, those guys were outside of the top 250. Go look at a lot of their starters. A lot of guys who weren't necessarily top 100 recruits. I think they're only 50% on turning top 100 recruits into starting college players. And I think it's a similar rate for top 200. So yeah, you gotta. There's a few things going on with this discussion. One, you know, I understand you want to compare everything to Ohio State. The fact is, they're in different places. I think there was optimism among Michigan fans that Harbaugh had the cachet and had the ability to kind of close that gap faster than thought possible. You know, instead they're going to have to chip at it, and so, so that's one component. Maybe just because if something works for Ohio State doesn't mean that it can work at Michigan, because Ohio State is in that Alabama, Clemson, Georgia group right now. And then two, you also have to look at what's realistic for Michigan. Geographically, Georgia has 16 top 100 recruits within 200 miles of them. Something like that. If Michigan had that, they'd be landing more of them too. So, yeah, geographically, Michigan is just not what it was in the 80s and 90s in terms of high school football. And neither is really the state of Ohio. Only 6 4-star recruits from the state of Ohio this cycle. And so it's become a national game for all these upper Midwest schools. And Michigan's got to go about it the way that they can go about it. I don't know. To me, if I were a Michigan fan wondering what Michigan, I would be looking at Penn State. I would be looking at Notre Dame. I would be looking at, not really Wisconsin, but maybe like an Oregon, even though they're on the West Coast. Schools that aren't geographically close to a lot of where their most talented players will play or are from. How are they finding a way to, and I think Oregon might be a good example. How are they making sure that they're recruiting California better than anybody else? How are they making sure that they're recruiting Florida as well as they are? That might be, I think Oregon, Notre Dame, and Penn State are probably the schools you want to compare to. And really, year in, year out, Michigan's about where those schools are. Oregon's on a nice little rise, but I don't know. I don't know about you, Steve.
California. You know, we talk a lot about with Harbaugh's deep roots there between coaching at San Diego, Stanford, and with the 49ers.
Yep.
That I've always been kind of curious as to why Michigan. I mean, granted, two 4-stars out of California this cycle, but I always kind of wondered if it's a state they could make more of a dent in, you know, especially with USC and UCLA being down, which is exactly what Oregon, more than any other program in the country right now, is taking advantage of. You know, you have USC with Clay Helton, looks like a lame duck coach. UCLA with Chip Kelly. I mean, who knows what's going to happen there. you know, there's this, the timing, it's kind of ripe, a ripe time to get in there and maybe make a little bit more of an impact, you know. And again, yeah, you talk about, that's exactly how Ohio State planted their seed in Texas. You got to remember where Texas was and where Texas A&M was when Ohio State really started to make an impact in Texas. It's when Mack Brown was starting to, or Charlie Strong was struggling mightily with Texas. And I want to say, was it Sumlin?
Sumlin?
Yeah. You know, it's had a couple decent years there, but by and large, you know, underachieved, let go. That's really where Ohio State, you know, it's like JK, like if Texas was Texas when Mack Brown was there, when they were winning big, JK Dobbins would have never been an Ohio State Buckeye. He'd have been at Texas all day long. You know, and probably the same probably goes for JT Barrett and some of those other guys. But that's what, you know, that was one of their big plays. And I think Herman was kind of the, ironically, the guy that really kind of got that going. But yeah, I mean, there's, you know, we'll see. It's interesting. And like I said, I love talking about the logistics much more than I like giving an update for the 30th time on the same kid for the last 2 months. So, always interesting to talk about this aspect of recruiting, the logistics, the strategic side of things, you know, and so we'll see where they go with this Partridge replacement. And if Campanella does decide to leave, we'll see where they go there. I don't know if they'll just scrap New Jersey and maybe hire guys that are stronger in some different regions, but you know, it'll be very interesting because yeah, I mean, Campanella and Partridge could have really owned New Jersey for Michigan. They did a great job in New Jersey last cycle. There's a couple pretty big time talents there this cycle in 2021. You know, that they're hard after, but if Campanella leaves, Partridge is already gone, that probably could just write Michigan off in those races unless they find somebody else with some deep Jersey roots that can get them in there, but it'd be tough.
Yep. So those are our thoughts on maybe some of the more heavily discussed topics of the week. Obviously, some bigger picture Michigan football discussion will occur. We'll have a basketball recap next week, kind of talking about the Minnesota game, any changes to what we had, the discussion we had yesterday, and then looking ahead to Iowa and some of the other games on the schedule. We'll get back into a rhythm. We'll get back into a rhythm as this offseason gets underway. Thank you all so much for listening. Check out all of our stories over at themichiganinsider.com and michigan.247sports.com. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 Podcast. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something. We'll see you next week.